Welcome to Changeable. This is episode number 298, The Headless Way with Richard Lang.
You're tuned in to Changeable with Dr. Amy Johnson. Changeable podcast is all about breaking habits, ending anxiety, and the ironic way change really works. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
Hey there, welcome back to Changeable. Today's episode is a portion of a call with Richard Lang, who is a teacher of Douglas Harding's The Headless Way. And Richard was a guest speaker in the Little School of Big Change community recently. And so that's what this conversation is it's a portion of our call with him. I didn't include when people in our community ask questions and his answers to those questions because I'm just preserving some privacy. But I share a lot of just what Richard shares in this episode, and I think you're going to absolutely love it. So if you're familiar with The Headless Way, you already know. And if you aren't familiar, it's really an ingenious kind of way of exploring our true nature. He's really looking at, and you'll hear Richard talk about this early on in our conversation, you know, how do we appear and how... In many ways, it's a matter of perspective. So from a few feet away, you look to someone else like a person. There's a body and a head, and there's a assumed person apparently inside that body or head. Lots of assumptions there, but that's how it looks from a few feet away. But what about from a few inches away? Who you are in that moment to that person, completely different in direct experience from a few inches away. What about at your center? Who you are to that person, to yourself, from your center, if there is a center, something to explore, completely different than how you appear in direct experience compared to a few inches away or a few feet away. And the headless way is really full of experiential practices, little experiments that we can do that reveal all of the assumptions that are constantly made when we think about who we are, who other people are, and the nature of reality. And it's just really fun and really light and shows us, to me, it's just continually reveals like, wow, of course, like the mind just paints it a certain way and just sells that to us and we buy it. We buy into it. We're like, yep, here's me. I'm in a body and sure seems that way. And moving on, you know, and when we really look, and it doesn't take much looking. That's what's amazing about these experiments is really doesn't take that much looking. You just look a little bit and you see, oh, well, it obviously is not as it seems. And, you know, that's what opens the door. There's a way that it seems, but then when we really look and we see, wait a minute, it can't be the way it seems, that really opens the door for so many insights and just a brand new way of seeing things. Personally, I love this because I love thinking about like my new course, the Me and My Life Perspective. I love thinking of it like that. It is just a point of view. That I'm a me, that you're a you, that we have lives we're living. That's nothing more than a point of view. It's not a truth. It's a perspective. It can sure seem that way and look that way at a certain angle. But then we switch up the angle or we look more directly and we see, wait a minute, there's actually no evidence for this. There is no direct evidence of me being a me living my life and you being a separate you living your separate life. Being in charge of things, making things happen. So I've always loved just seeing that as a perspective. And I feel like that's what these experiments really, really help one do. So I hope you enjoy this conversation. If you're intrigued by it, if this is new to you and you enjoy it, you can go to headless.org and you'll see all kinds of other interviews and a whole page or more of these experiments where you can play with them and do those yourself. And if you enjoy these guest speakers and would like to be there live and communicating with them and asking them questions, think about joining our community. I mean, it's an amazing place to be. We have calls twice a week, including a guest speaker call once a month. It's a relatively small group where you get a ton of attention if you want it, but there's also lots of people who just hang out in the background, and that's totally fine too. So I'll put a link in the show notes to our community, and you can check that out if you're interested. So I hope you enjoy this conversation with Richard Lang.
Well, thank you very much, Amy, and everyone for inviting me into your group. I appreciate that very much, and enjoy meeting people, enjoy meeting you all. And yes, I have been with this for 50 odd years. I met Douglas Harding, who wrote that book on having no head in the 60s, but I met him in 1970 when I was a teenager. And actually, rather interestingly for me, a few weeks ago, I was in a shop and the person asked me what I did. And I said, oh, well, I teach the headless way. And she said, what's that? And I just looked at her and I said, well, I can't see my face. Instead, I see yours. My hands disappear here into what I call open space. And instead of my face, I've got yours. And she went, oh, gosh, there's some things that are really interesting that you never think about. And I had to go into the same shop a week later. And she again sort of asked me what I did. And I said, oh, it's that headless way thing where, you know, you can't see your own head. Instead, you see the other person's. And she went, oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Oh, yeah. You know, I think she hadn't thought about it once in the week. And that same week, the same happened with someone else. And just a few days ago, I was reflecting on that, and I was thinking, when I was shown this, when I was 17, I was looking for it. I was asking that question, what am I? And I was open-minded, and I went to a Buddhist conference and met Douglas Harding by chance there, and he said, notice you can't see your own face. Instead, you see the world. I could stop thinking about it. I don't think I've really stopped thinking about it since then. And obviously, more than thinking about it, just being aware of it. And it's taken, you know, throughout all that time since then, really, I've been exploring its implications and what it means. And is it a trick? And does it make sense? And how does it work out in relationships? And how does it help you cope with suffering? And, you know, it is a long and rich ride for me, I have to say. And when I met Douglas, he said, if you're interested, he said to everyone, come and stay. So I went and stayed at his house. I mean, it was not a course. You didn't pay. You just turned up as a friend who was interested in the headless way. And there were lots of other people there. And it was always open house. I just went. And I was in the company of people who were valuing this observation. It's the first person subjective view. You can't see your head now. I believe you're in the same condition. You can't see your own head now. Instead, you see the world. And, of course, you can see it on the screen. You can see it in the mirror. Other people can see it. So that's where there comes in the working out, the making sense of it. But I, therefore, when I was growing up, and since then, I've got friends from those times, more than 50 years ago, that I'm, you know, good friends with whom I share this. And I found that, because I'll come on to some experiments, but I mean, basically, I've already spilled the beans, as they say. If for example, you just hold your hands out in front of you, and this way, you've got to be like a five-year-old in a way, and I know it's been recorded, but probably only I'm being recorded, but hold your hands out in front. This is an experiment, you know. If to enter the kingdom of heaven, you've got to be like a child. You see your hands. You see a gap between your hands. Now bring them past either side of your head, but watch what happens from your point of view. They get bigger and bigger and bigger, and they disappear. And I say they disappear into my true nature, this vast, boundless awareness. And then you bring them forward, and they come out of nowhere. And I think, you know, perhaps your answer is yes, but, well, that's not surprising, because it's such a different way of seeing yourself from the social view, which is what everyone else sees, what you see on the screen. So it's bound to bring up questions. But just to complete what I was saying really about my own experience, I mean, it certainly has not meant that somehow I haven't suffered in my life or that I haven't had to deal with all the normal things you deal with growing up, relationships, health, money, all of that. But it just, I've discovered, means that you are operating from a place of vastness and openness and innate wisdom, I would say, far beyond one's personal remit, you know. But one of the things that I've really found while I've been growing up with this and all my life is to have friends I share this with is so supportive. And I travel a lot now, always have really, but I would just personally, from that moment when Douglas Harding pointed at me and said, look, you see, if you point out at things, just use your finger, this is a five-year-old thing again, I mean, it's so simple and obvious. Point out and you see something. I'm pointing at a window or a bottle or a towel, you see, and I'm pointing at various things. So you can look along your finger and point. But there's one very special place in the whole universe where you can point at nothing. See, so point back at the place you're looking out of. I say I'm pointing at nothing. And keep pointing. It likes to be pointed at, I would say. I don't see my face here. I don't see any shapes or colors or movement. It's space for the world. And then if I point out like this, so this is that two, it's a two-way gesture that's really useful for communicating if you just do it. This indicates that there's a view in into nothing and a view out into something provisional, and there's no dividing line. That alone blows my mind. Yeah. When you're looking at someone, it's face to no face. Here's another experiment, as we call them. If you're looking at my face now, face to no face, I say. I say, I'm trading face, so I'm empty for you, open for you. And it is that simple and available, I say. So one of the things I found, am I doing all right, Amy? I'm just chatting away.
Great. Here. No, perfect.
And if you have any questions, just, you know, let me know, anybody, or comments, reflections. Because what I found growing up, all right, I'll put this in context. One of the ways I've understood this, the place of this experience of headlessness or openness, or I mean, another useful image is single eye. What do I mean by single eye? I mean, if you make your hands like this, like two glasses, and put your fingers together, and so the dividing line between the two holes, and then you put them on, I find that the dividing line disappears. So the two become one. And then you can put your hands into the great space there all the way around. So that, I call that single eye. It's not actually an eye. It's a space, consciousness, single. So I say that, here's just to put it in a context for you of growing up, which is really the context I got from Douglas Harding, but I've just thought about it a lot myself. So when I was a baby, when you were a baby, I think, you were headless, if I use this language. And couldn't see my head, looked in the mirror, not me yet, didn't understand language, so didn't understand any feedback, so I just opened. And I think that's one of the things we like about babies is they give us permission to be open too, because they're not looking, they're not judging you, they're not worried about what they look like, and that gives you, I think, permission not to worry about what you look like. To drop that image of your face or your appearance and just be the space that you're looking out of and taking in that baby who's just looking, you see. So the first stage is being headless, at large, no boundary, without thinking about it, and so on. But as soon as you start to, you know, from there on, your parents and others tell you what you look like. Nice little baby. And they are telling you what they see you to be at 6 feet or 3 feet or whatever it is. Yeah. And if you had language, you'd say, I'm sorry, but I just don't know what you're talking about. There isn't a baby here. There isn't a face. I'm just open, you see. But the feedback, the information coming in is 24/7 from everyone around you that you are what you look like. So I'm going to just veer off yet. This is like one of these conversations where you start and you eventually get back to the point. Hang on in there. But what I am, this is a science bit, what I am depends on the range of the observer. So you're looking at me through the camera from, say, 3 or 4 feet, I don't know. But if you came up to me with the right instrument, you would no longer see Richard's face, you'd see a patch of skin, say, or an eye. You came closer with the right instruments, you'd no longer see a patch of skin, you'd see cells. Or if I was coming up to you, if you were saying, I want to know what I am, that seems to be an important question. What am I? Please help me. I say, well, from here, you're a person. Yeah, but you're over there. I want to know what I am at the center. Okay, I'll come up to you. Okay, here, you're a patch of skin. Yeah, but you're still way off. What am I at center? Zero. You get the idea? I'm zooming into you, helping you work out what you are, according to science. So I come even closer, and this patch of skin is a cell, or cells. See, but I'm still not there. So I come up, and the cell turns out to be made of molecules. That means that I've moved closer and left the appearance of the cell behind. You're like an onion with layers, and I'm moving through these layers. It's a different way of thinking. You've kind of got to reframe, because we think we're a person here at center, but science says, no, you're a person out here. And you go up to, by the time you get to the molecule, you left the humanity behind, and you've even left life behind. And you go further, the molecule turns out to be an atom or atoms. See, that means I move closer. And you've probably left color behind and solidity. Come closer to you asking this question, what are you? Let's say you're interested. I'm very interested in this question, what am I? And the best they can do is say, well, at very, very close range, you're practically nothing, practically empty space right there. Except wisps of energy, but we just can't make that leap and final step over from the outside to the inside. And you say, well, I say, well, no matter, because I'm here and I'll look for myself. And I look, that's the pointing, I say, oh, it's not nearly nothing, it's totally nothing, totally empty. And yet, I can tell you something about this emptiness that you don't know. It's aware. I am aware. And is not just empty, it's full of you, of the room, of everything. And I would say this is what the great mystics are talking about. At your center, nearer to you than what anyone else has the right or authority to tell you about, nearer to you than all of that is this vast awareness, doesn't come or go, is no dividing line, full of everything. See? So, back to the baby is that openness. And now everyone starts to say, you're a baby. Well, they are reflecting back what you are from 6 feet or 3 feet. You are that from there, but that's not what you are at center. But as you're growing up, no one tells you, talks about what you are at center, this vast openness. They only tell you what you are for them at 6 feet. And they point in the mirror or on the Zoom screen, and they say, look, that's what we see. That image there is what we see when we look at you. And in order to function, join in society, you better get used to putting on that face. I know you can't actually see it on, but you've got to act as if you're behind a face. See? And they teach you when you see, if you touch your neck where you can't see it, for a baby, that's a sensation arising in awareness. You haven't labeled it, you haven't got language yet. You haven't looked in the mirror and seen your hand touching your neck. But if you now look on Zoom, if you touch your cheek, you can see that. So now you learn to associate that image of the hand touching the cheek with the sensation. And you learn that with your mouth and your eyes and your head and your back, so you don't bump your head, so you know where to put your food. So what you're doing is, in effect, in imagination, is what I suggest. Growing up, you learn to go out to other people, turn around and look back at yourself through their eyes and see what they see. I mean, imagine what they see, which is what you see in the mirror with a few adjustments left and right and all of that. Growing up is learning to take on board what others say you are. It's empathy. This means you are able to jump into someone else's shoes and have some understanding of their experience, including their experience of you. So I hope you're following me this way. It's fairly simple, really, but I hope you're following me. So growing up is learning to speak as if you are the one others say you are, the other one others see you are. And we repress our own point of view, which is headless, vast, is if you mention this as you're growing up, that you're headless or you're vast open, society will say, no, you're not. Oh, okay, I'm not. See, don't be silly. Don't be stupid. That's mad. So we repress this first person view of being single-eyed, hands disappearing. So say, no, of course, your hands are there. You just can't see them. All of that, rather than they're there for us, but not for you. You see, relativity. So by the time you're an adult, by the time I was an adult or a young adult, I completely had bought in. I had no idea of anything else really. Well, I did, but basically, Sam said, you are what you look like. You're a thing separate from everything else. Now, I had heard the rumor, which is why I went to the Buddhist Society Summer School. I'd heard the rumor that you're not, that there's something called enlightenment or salvation or freedom, and that this was about awakening to a treasure within you. And even when I was about 15, I wrote an essay at school about traveling to the Himalayas and visiting a sage on a mountaintop. I was thinking about it. And the sage told me in my dream come article, the sage told me that what I was looking for was a light that was within me. But it was actually a very little use to me. It was only when Douglas Harding, in my own story, only when Douglas Harding said, look there, there's the light, not even a light, there, you see, and I looked, see. And so what I'm saying partly here is that when you're growing up, the main part of the work, I would say, in growing up is learning which person you are, because as a baby, you haven't a clue. You have to learn you're the one in the mirror. You don't have a choice. And you've got to empathize and see yourself through the eyes of others from all those different angles and kind of add it up and take that on board deeply. And if you think about it, that's a huge job. And you might be forgiven to saying to your infant friend, you know, this thing about wearing your face all day long and remembering what you look like and acting as if you're a person. I can do it for about a minute or 3 seconds, and then I forget, and I just go carefree and headless again. And your friend says, yeah, I have no idea how I'm going to actually manage to wear that face all day long, and I just don't know how I'll do it. Thing is, we all did it. And I thought about this. If you think about how did that happen, the way it happened was that you were told 24/7 that that's what you were. There was no option. And if you wanted to join in, which you did want to join in society, you had to take it on. So it's like, you know, learning a language. You just no option. If you want to function, you have to learn to speak. You have to learn to talk. You have to learn to act as if you're that person with no doubt so deep in you that you, when you wake up in the morning, you don't think, who am I? Who am I? God, this is so embarrassing. Who am I? I've written it down somewhere. So you don't have to do that. You just go, Richard, you see. Now, when you then see you're headless, and I'd say that's just waking up to your point of view and taking it seriously. Seriously enough to entertain the idea that it might be true, that it might be useful, that it might be what the great mystics are talking about. So if in some way this appeals to you, then you might say, well, that's all very well, Richard. I can't see my head. But I mean, really, for me to be aware of this 24/7, to me to operate from this, for me not to have to, you know, wake up in the morning and go, oh my God, what is my true nature? I wrote it down somewhere. What, just to operate from it as if it's default? Say, there's no way I'm going to do that. Say, well, it's not rocket science. Hang out with others who are aware of it. You've already developed that skill of taking on board what society says you are. You see, it's deep in your bones. You don't have to think about it. And when you, I have to say, in my experience, when you surround yourself with friends, are in a society where this is acknowledged, valued, pointed to, celebrated, all of that, it becomes just part of the conversation. See, so growing up, I hung out with Douglas and his friends. Everybody was aware of their true nature. And you sort things out much more quickly. For example, am I doing all right, Amy, here?
Doing great.
I've got to check, you see, a bit of feedback, you see. I'm worried about what you think. There you go.
Perfect.
So when there's a maturing process here. So we can do some stuff with eyes closed, you know, we can think about it in different ways, but I'm just going to talk to you a bit about this, is when you see you're headless, so just notice you can't see your head now, literally. Instead, you see the world. And we pointed back and there's nothing to see and you put your hands in your single eye and there's more stuff to do. You look at me and it's face to no face. So common reaction is, all right, I can see that, so what? So what? See? I think that's just a fantastic question. That's what I asked, you see. And if you start meditating and you sit down and you do your first 5 minute, 3 minute meditation and you finish it and you go, well, so what? I didn't do anything. You know, that didn't work. Your meditator friend will say, Richard, you've got to do more than 3 minutes. If you want to benefit, you've got to hang on in there through the initial so what. And I think this is a process of maturing. You realize that it's not necessarily a wow, and that the moments when it's not a wow are somehow very important. See, I've been traveling, I jump all over the shop here. I've been traveling for two or three weeks in the States giving workshop, one after the other. I've met a lot of people, just so inspiring. I get back to England and it's all gone. It's all gone. And I have this, I want to sort of resurrect it and get the wows back. But, you know, you have this instinct that it's not right. You know, that's not going to... And there is something wise and such a relief to just return to zero and then just receive what you get. Because nothing's lost. And it's the same with meditation, I say. It's aridity, it's called, in some traditions. And it's respected because the bare ground is fertile. And it's the cycle of the seasons, that if you... Someone in a workshop recently said to me, I get what you're seeing, Richard. I get it. You're looking at nothing, looking out of vast open space. But I feel sad, he said. It makes me feel sad. I feel depressed. I said, I get it. I understand. It's not the wow. It's not the bright lights. It's just kind of bare ground, you see. And then I found myself saying, but I have to say something about this bare ground. It's like winter. When you're in winter in England, it's not my favorite season. Some people love it, and they love it. I had a friend who loved it because it was a time to retreat, hibernate, and go in. And regenerate and get your batteries recharged. Because you understand that after winter comes spring, summer, autumn, that you don't stay in winter forever in the seasons, you see, and that it is a time of regeneration and there's deep things happening, hidden, you see. So it involves some faith. Everyone has faith with the seasons in England. You know it's going to be spring and then summer. So when you get that so wet, what? When you're sitting on your cushion and nothing is happening, when you say, I can't see my head, but so what? When it even makes you feel sad, like this guy, I say, I can only say that for me, this bare ground is fertile and reliably fertile, reliably creative. It just can't stop. Coming up with this present moment now, I say, out of the great void. And this is where gradually over the years, you see it works. It doesn't deliver necessarily what you want. Sometimes it does, but it delivers something far more interesting and surprising and wise that may take years to understand, actually. So one of the things that I've kind of understood is I've walked this path, and because I've had friends I can talk to, I used to talk to Douglas Harding for, you know, ages and ages, and friends, and still do. And you reckon, oh, okay, it's not a wow. You're not doing anything wrong. If you don't feel wow now, keep noticing your single eye. You know, I mean, in as much as you're doing, if that's doing anything, just be aware now. You can't see your eyes. You can't see your face. Can't see your back. Can't see the wall behind you. And so society from 6 feet will tell you, you've got a face, you've got a body, you've got set up against a background, you're English, you're American, you're whatever, you're this old, you're that. But now have the independence to look for yourself as well. Not denying that, but look for yourself now and say, ask yourself, who am I? It's the great question. Who are you? Are you a thing? Because if you're a thing, like society says you are, you'll be separate from every other thing, every other person, and you will have a beginning, a birth, and you'll have a death. See? And that's what the Buddha noticed. He noticed that everyone is born, everyone suffers, everyone gets old, everyone gets ill, and everyone dies. And he looked for, you know, however happy you are, however rich you are, you die. And he looked for freedom, because there's no freedom in that. And he tried to get off the wheel. You see, well, how do you get off the wheel? Well, what I'm saying is, in this modern way of the headless ways, don't deny what, I'm not asking you to deny what others say you are, but just check, be independent enough for this moment now, for this hour and a half, to put aside just as much as you can what society is feeding back to you, and look for yourself. And these experiments are looking. They're not primarily thinking or even understanding. That's the bare ground. And as you come back to it, you see it doesn't develop. You can't develop nothing. But your understanding will gradually develop if you water the root. So being with friends, working it out, recognizing it doesn't ever change, that it's not always a wow, you see. Gradually, I say, that I gradually, at ever deeper levels, say yes to that truth. See? And another thing that I've learned, which is something I'm still learning like mad as I meet people, see, I understand. You see, when you say empathy and you see yourself from the point of view of others, you don't actually. You only ever have your own point of view. You can't prove that anyone else is conscious. See, if someone says to me, Richard, how many consciousnesses do you actually experience? I have to say one. Now, I believe in yours 99% with every fiber of my body, but I distinguish between what I believe, accept, act as if is true, and what I actually experience. And they're not arguing, you know, they don't kind of, one doesn't make the other untrue in a way. But I say, now, how many consciousnesses do I experience now? One. I call this space consciousness for the world. One. Incomparable. And I'd like you just to notice your single eye. So this is looking in, pointing in, into your no face, the view in. So let's do it again, because you may not be familiar with my language or gestures. But pointing in, I see nothing. So I'm asking you, point in. So that's one direction. Point out with the other hand, that's the other direction, out, in and out. And out is full of things. I've got daffodils here. Plus, I would include my thoughts, feelings, sensations, sounds. Any content is somehow there, and here is a space that contains it. I'm using language to articulate this nonverbal experience, but I find no dividing line. Now, so when I say the view out, I mean that. So as you're looking now at the view out, see, I can see my kitchen. And I'd like you to notice that whatever you're looking at, let's say you move your attention from me for the moment to an object in the room where you are, you'll notice that that object is at the center of your field of view and it's most in focus. And as you sort of become aware of the edge, the periphery, it fades out, disappears. Now you look at something else and that becomes the center. So now I'm looking at a daffodil and now that's the center and it fades out to the periphery. See? So this is just pointing out that anything you look at has a clear edge to it, and it is inside the object, and everything in the world is outside that object. So there's the boundary to the bottle, there's the boundary to the daffodil, it's in the center of the field of view. Now bring your attention to the whole view. So we call this peripheral vision, or soft eyes, or wide-eyed, or panoramic, you see. So you can't look directly at the edge, so, you know, don't bother trying if you like. But you can sense it in whatever way it's given. I find it just fades out. And it does not have a hard edge like the daffodil or the bottle or the screen. It has a soft edge. And words are rather inadequate, but they're good enough to articulate something. I say it's not surrounded by anything. I look at the screen and above it is a window and to the right is a wall and to the left is a bit more of a window and below it is the keyboard. The screen is surrounded by things I can see. Is the whole field of view surrounded by anything? I say, no, it's not. It fades into this vast space I'm looking out of, fades into consciousness. See? And it's the view is single. Single. And I can ask you about yours, but that's secondhand. I appreciate your description of your view out. I take it seriously, but it's secondhand. My view is the only view I know. I believe this is the same for you. And it is given in consciousness. It's floating in consciousness. I'm using words to describe this experience. There's nothing under it, nothing above it, nothing around it. It's uncontained. And I would say that's the same for consciousness, just speaking more generally, the space and the contents is uncontained. There's nothing around it, nothing outside it. See? So when I step way back, I go, wow. I mean, it's not necessarily a wow, but I think, whoever talked about that? Whoever articulated to me the reality that I can only experience my consciousness and that it is vast and includes everything? No one talked about that. Everybody, if I'd mentioned that growing up, society would have just said that's stupid, you're not in the right, all of that. So the headless way of saying, understood from the outside, I am one amongst many. From the inside, I am the one that contains the many. I'm not inside anything. That's the freedom the Buddha was talking about. I say, you're off the wheel. The wheel is in you. And when I talk to my friends about this, they go, yeah, it's the same for me. Exactly the same. See, that I'm looking out of nothing and everything is in me. And my view is different from yours, but mysteriously. And so even just with that, my appreciation over the years that everyone is this. And it's not something that some people get and others don't. In terms of, well, some people are and some people are not. No, you can't see your head. Instead, you see the world, the one world, the one consciousness. And this for me is namaste. This means I deeper and deeper accept that you are in the same wonderful condition as I am. Whether you agree or not doesn't actually matter to me. I mean, it does matter hugely, but it doesn't alter my deep, deep conviction. This is namaste. This is, I honor the one in me as the same as the one in you. The greatest respect, you know, you can pay for to someone. You can respect what they've done. You can respect their courage. You can respect all the, what they've done, all those kind of things. But then consider who they really are. and where those actions are coming from, really, and where those words are coming out of the source. And to know who you are is to know who everyone is. In that sense, you see. And growing up and being with friends that accept this and talk about it, and that's one of the great things that Douglas Harding, who wrote On Having a Head, did. I mean, one, he made it accessible. You point, you look, you listen. But secondly, he developed a language that articulates it, which means we can talk about it. I can talk about it with my friends. Face to no face, space for the world. I'm still and the world moves through me. Close my eyes, the world disappears. Open it, reappears. So here's another thing to just, you see, once you get the idea that this is distinguishing between what others say you are and what you find yourself to be. And you're not, it's not a debate, it's not an argument, you can't prove it, but you can distinguish between what you are for others and what you are for yourself. And both are important, absolutely. But once you get the idea that it's not an argument, that you can't prove it, you don't need to prove it, and it's talking about two different things in a way, you then, I think, give yourself permission to start to explore what it is. So I've just said, well, there's only one view and it fades out all the way around into nothing. That from my point of view, the whole world has given to me is floating in consciousness. So here's another, it's not contained. So I would then take that to me, I'm not contained. But here's another one to notice. Once you get this idea, like a child, you see, we're going to have a look at the first person world. Now, when you look at two objects within the view, if you can do this, you can compare the size of one with the size of the other, and one will be bigger or smaller than the other, or maybe about the same size. Any two objects you can see which is bigger or smaller. So there you go, you see. Now look at the whole view, the view out, the single view. How big is it? There is not a second view to compare it with. It's single. So I can't say it's bigger or smaller. Now, did anyone talk to me about that? You know, when I was growing up, talk about that to me? No one ever did. It was just completely off the agenda. I mean, just no one ever thought about it. But when I look at the view, I say, well, how wide is the view? I mean, it's a valid scientific question. How wide is the view? Well, it's not wider or narrower than another view because there isn't one. And all I can say, it's as wide as the kitchen. Or when I go in my garden, it's as wide as the garden. Or when I look up at night at the stars, it's as wide as the galaxy, as all the stars in the sky. It's now as wide as the Zoom meeting with all you and plus the bit of the kitchen. See, but the view itself, it doesn't change size. In a way, it's just single, unchanging, constant. Constant. So there's something there that's constant in your life, you. So if you see, when I was growing up, we talked about all these things and we tested them and we looked into what they might mean. And it's endless, you see. And who is asking this, you see? Well, from the outside it's Richard, but from the inside it's the one asking itself, I am, what am I? I have happened. I say, you have happened. What are you? So when I go around doing workshops and taking people through the very memorable experiments we do, in groups especially, with when you're in person, what I find is happening over the years, I've seen this, to begin with, it's very unusual for people, really unusual for people to come across this. And you'd get a certain amount of resistance and that wasn't wholly them, it'd be me or Douglas imagining people would be resistant, so they were. But as time's gone on and as more and more people come across this. I mean, in a way, it doesn't matter what way you come in, as long as you come in, it Doesn't matter what route, you know, it doesn't have to be the headless way. But that's my experience and skill, I suppose, or it's my experience at sharing it. See, I found that increasingly, and it's speeding up, more and more people are going, yeah. Or even, oh yeah, I already knew that, but it's kind of nice to come across a headless way to confirm it. I say, great. See, so the more I go around, honestly, the more I'm just meeting people all the time. The first time I'm saying, yeah, got it. Yeah, I am you. I am space for the world. This is very encouraging. And I am in a unique position because it is my life and I do this all the time. And we have Zoom groups like you do. And we have a big community, growing community of friends, not students. I don't have students. I make friends. Growing community of people who are saying, yep, got it. And it's such a lovely thing because when you're with someone, you look at them and you see that their face is yours. You don't have to say it. It's love. See, no dividing line, no distance. But to articulate it and acknowledge it to that person, like I am doing to all of you now, you could say through this medium, I am you, I am space for you, and I am profoundly convinced you are space for me. And this is love, and this is beautiful, and it's very deep and available, and you can't do it wrong, see. So I have lots to share still, but any questions that anyone has or comments or reflections or...
Yeah, let's open it up to anything you guys are seeing or want to ask. I love this so much. I love like just the feeling of testing these assumptions, the way that you do this. It's like, oh yeah, that I assume I have a head. I assume there are objects that I'm one of them. And just, it's so gentle and just so curious to just look at these things and just, we're just testing. I love it.
Yeah, that's the spirit of it. I'll just carry on. Yeah, cool. And just take you through a few more testing things and a few more being curious about one's own experience. And like David was saying, not taking for granted what you are. And especially with the backing of all the great traditions, I think that says that there's something just deeply beautiful and wonderful about you, nearer to you than you're breathing. It's kind of hidden by its obviousness and hidden by its plainness. What I'm doing is pointing to that place. So I'll come back to you, Sarah, in a minute. I'm just going to chat on for a bit and then I'll circle around to you if that's okay. Cool. Yeah, I look forward to hearing what you've got to say, but I'll just keep going for a minute here. And so the view, your own view of the single eye, the fading out with nothing around the field of view is what I'd say. And I can't say how big it is or even where it is. I can't say how far away it is from nothing. So now close your eyes. And we could apply that idea of being a baby again just to help us put aside what we've learned. As if you're a baby, you've just been born, haven't yet opened your eyes, haven't got language, don't know what name you've got, haven't even looked in a mirror. And yet, let's say you say, well, what am I? I've happened. I don't know how I come to be here. I don't know how I am, but what am I? Well, I say, I can't say how big I am. How big is my consciousness? Or even the darkness I experience now, how big is it? Well, I don't find a second darkness to compare it with. How wide is it? It's as wide as wide. And is it inside anything? Is that darkness for a start? Is it inside anything? Well, it just fades out like the field of view into vast, strange, mysterious nothingness, you see. Or it's appearing in nothingness. And then if I go to my body sensations, well, I don't yet know that my body sensation. I haven't seen a picture of myself or, you know, if you go to your what I say is your right hand. Because you've got the image and label and name of right hand, you can direct your attention. I can direct your attention to that sensation. That's really useful, you see. Or your back, or your left foot. But now imagine that you haven't yet learned those labels. So do you have a back? How long is that sensation? If you attend to the whole field of sensation, see, Sam Harris on the app, he talks about the cloud of sensation. I think it's rather a good image, cloud, rather than body. Body has a boundary, but a cloud is amorphous and changing and in the sky. So I would say my field of sensation doesn't have a clear boundary. I can't say how wide it is. There is not a second to compare it with. It's single, like the darkness. In fact, I can't separate it out from the darkness. I can distinguish in language the darkness on the one hand and the field of sensation on the other, but I can't separate them. They're arising together in this vast open sky of awareness, as they say. And then if I go to the sound of my voice, the sound of ringing in the ears or other sounds, see? How big is the whole field of sound, if I can put it like that? I don't find a second to compare it with. It's single again. And where is the edge? Does it have an edge? An edge, a hard edge, is something on the other side. But the field of sound, like the field of sensation and darkness, just the best I can say is it fades out into silence. Or I could say the sounds come out of that mysterious silence or awareness or consciousness, see, or pass through it. And when I put it like that, when I say that the sounds of my voice or the sound of traffic is coming out of the silence, for me, I'm acknowledging that that silence is alive. It is creative. It is productive. It is that bare ground out of which spring and summer come. It's not a dead silence. And it doesn't distinguish between inside and, you know, some sounds are outside and some are in. All right, so you hear my voice and you say that's outside. And then say you hear ringing in your ears and you say that's inside. That is really useful if you go to the doctor. Say, you know, whenever I walk down the road, I hear traffic. That's normal. That's outside. But I also hear this ringing in the ears. Oh, well, I don't have that, but I really get that. And I'll have a look at that, you see. So that's really useful to be able to distinguish some sounds, label them outside, some are inside. But from my point of view, I don't find a dividing line. I can distinguish between outside and inside, but I can't separate them. So I say all the sounds are coming, arising together out of this mysterious being, like the darkness, like the sensations, and like thoughts and feelings. So think of a number, there's a thought. Remember the face of a friend and the affection you feel, there's a feeling. Imagine a mountain, you see. Now, do you know where those come from? The number 10, or the image of a river, or something else, or breakfast, or whatever. I don't know where they come from. Or I say, like the Buddhists, that mind comes out of no mind. You see, if I say to you, how big is your mind? All the thoughts and feelings, reactions, memories, anticipations, judgments that are going on now, how big is that whole field of mind? Well, I don't find a second to compare it with. So it's as big as it is. See? And does it have a clear boundary? Well, it's like the darkness. It just kind of fades out into no mind, into the same mysterious space that the darkness fades into, or the sensations or the sounds. One consciousness. One consciousness. That's huge. One, because there's nothing outside me that can threaten me, see? Or is apart from me. Everything is within me, I say in language. See? What a creative silence. What a creative nothingness. What a creative no mind. They're just coming up with whatever is in the present moment now. And you just couldn't stop it. It's just helplessly productive, helplessly creative, productive, spontaneous, reliably so. And I can't see how it could ever stop. But, So, who are you? Not what society says only, that's important, but who do the great teachers say you are, you see? Well, not just what they say, because they may be wrong. But it's worth checking out, isn't it? They say that you are vast, you are the one, everything is in you, you are just indescribably productive and, you know, immeasurably productive and creative. And you are the world. They say this. Well, what I'm doing is inviting you to enjoy that and to be aware of that and to put forward the idea that this is always available. It is your nature. It never goes away. You've always been this. And this is what we have in common, I say. You can't know what someone else's experience is. But it makes sense, everywhere you look at it, that they are in the same wonderful condition as you are at center. And if they have the simplicity to look for themselves and then describe what they find, I find with all the people I talk to, say, yeah, space of the world, looking out the single eye. I have your face, Richard, you have mine. I am empty for the world. The thoughts and feelings I'm having do not affect my true nature. They might be uncomfortable. You see, right now, keep your eyes closed for another few minutes or something. If you tense your right hand, now you've got tension there, stress. Does that stress affect the space? I say no. It's arising in the space. It does not affect the space. Of course, you can do something about the stress as well as noticing your space for it, like relax your hand now, you see, or take some exercise or talk to a friend. You can do all kinds of things to help you cope better. But I say don't, in that process, if you can, overlook your true nature. So take a deeper breath. Get your energy moving a little bit. And then open your eyes. And I say, well, what has changed? The view out has changed. Now I see all of you in the kitchen. But it's arising in the nothing here. No distance. Close your eyes. You have that power to make things disappear. That is your power as who you really are. Now open your eyes. On the inside, everything appears again. I could even say, you make everything appear. I would say that. That's who you really are. I do say that. And that, you see, we're very susceptible to what people say and think. That's part of the course in growing up and becoming a person. And if you are only around people who deny their true nature or are not even aware of it, I was talking to someone at the weekend, who just said, you know, I just was not, it's not that I ignored it or suppressed it. I wasn't even aware of it. See? So then when you find yourself around people who are aware of it, and they will in subtle ways, verbal and nonverbal, remind you of it and say it's things like, I've just said, it's okay when the insights are gone, nothing's gone wrong. This is par for the course. Just have patience and you will get what you need, you know, we believe, and you test it out. And it grows, you see, and it grows. And I suppose it's hard work at times, but the rest of the time it's enjoyable, it's fun. And when you can be with friends, say, yeah, I have your face, face to no face, face for you. She's loving. This is nourishing. So I, Douglas Harding once said to me, he said, Richard, if you want this to grow in your life, do something that's connected with it, or hang out, I suppose, with friends who are aware of this in their own way, you know. And yeah.
Oh, thank you so much, Richard. And thank you, everyone, for being here and being our friends that we get to explore this with, and for your questions and comments.
A real pleasure to be you all, be space for you all, be here with you. I'm just looking around and enjoying your faces. Yeah, lovely. Okay, all right. Thank you.
Thank you. Would you like to be part of a supportive, loving community of like-minded people exploring the big questions in life? Would you like a place you can turn for personal support on anything you're struggling with at any time and get support from several certified change coaches? For the first time ever, my incredible Little School of Big Change community is now open to anyone, even if you haven't been through the 6-week Little School of Big Change course. It's a place to see how things like anxiety, doubt, habits, and insecurities are actually incredible gifts. They're here to wake you up. To join us in this community, please go to dramyjohnson.com/thecommunity.